Hello, plantpreneurs, and welcome back to Series 3 of the Plant-Based Business Podcast, brought to you by us here at Feevolution. I'm Damien Clarkson, your co-host and co-founder at Feevolution, where right now we're busy building a new home for plant-based innovators over at feevolution.com. On this show, each week we explore what it takes to create and scale a plant-based business, and we do this with the best and brightest entrepreneurs and investors who are busy building solutions for a better world. This week, my co-founder Judy Nadell and I spoke with Akila Relliford, founder of Mary Lou Cosmetics. In this week's interview, we cover her journey from pre-med student to beauty entrepreneur. We discuss how going viral on Twitter kickstarted her business, the importance of community in building a brand, and how to create high-impact marketing campaigns. Both Judy and I got so much from this interview, and we hope you do too, so sit back and enjoy. I'm Damien, and I'm with my co-host Judy today. Hey, Judy.
Hey.
And we're joined by Akila Relliford, founder of Mary Louise Cosmetics, all the way out in LA, California. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, and getting up nice and early to be on this show. When we do the podcast with our West Coast guests, it's always like, you know, you've just got out of bed and we're just like at the end of the day all hyped up after. So it's always lots of fun. Cool. So on this show, we like to start at the beginning and tell us a little bit about your background growing up. And were you always interested in entrepreneurship?
I think I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. I was that girl in elementary school who would paint on rocks and like sell the rocks to her classmates for like a quarter. And then in high school, I would make bows. I would make my mom take me to Walmart after school and we'd buy fabric and I would make bows and I would have my friends like place orders for them the day before and then like give them out at lunchtime. And I did the same thing in like college with like t-shirts. And then at one point I sold like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Cutco knives, but they're like, you go door to door and you sell knives and it's like a huge thing.
This is definitely an American thing.
It is. It's like, hey, let this stranger in your house with like a bag of knives so I can sell them to you. It's like, yeah. So I did that. I did like anything that gave me a sense of entrepreneurship. I did like Poshmark and like sold clothes or my used clothes on like that app. So I don't think at the time I knew that it was entrepreneurship. I just knew that I wanted to work for myself. I wanted to make the rules. And if I made like $20, that was fine. I could just like ball out at Forever 21 and it'd be okay. And then I started Mary Louise in college at Howard University in my dorm room. So throughout this journey, I've always been interested in skincare and beauty products. And on my free time, I would just go on YouTube and just look at beauty tutorials. And so in my free time, I would tweet about DIY skincare tips or masks or tricks, whether it be like a detox water recipe or whatever, on how to get great skin with products you can use in your kitchen. And one day I woke up with like 30,000 retweets on this thread and a bunch of girls asking me, what can I do to fix this? What recipe can I do to fix this? And long story short, my Twitter is suspended because this was during like the 2016 Trump election. And I think they thought I was a Russian bot because my account was growing so quickly and everyone's accounts were getting like disabled in like the thousands, including mine. So it was so sad. So if anyone from Twitter is listening, please unsuspend my account. Thanks so much.
Yeah. All those guys are vegan. They need to be listening to this.
Right?
Are you still suspended now?
It's like 3 years later, and what? It's like,
I can't believe that.
Oh no, you need to get onto that. That's craziness.
I know. They just won't give my account back. So I'm like, I need to speak to someone who like actually works at Twitter now. At this
yeah,
point.
Definitely. Because I read that you had got suspended. I didn't know she was still suspended.
Yes.
Oh no.
Well, I don't know if you know Miyoko, who runs Miyoko's Creamery. I'm pretty sure one of her investors is a co-founder of Twitter. So Miyoko, if you're listening, have a word.
And, sort it out.
She's a guest of the show, so I hope she's listening and she can put in a word for you.
Yes, thank you. That would be so amazing.
I love that that you were kind of hustling, I guess, from a young age. Like, I was the same. I had a bunch of really small little hustles that I always had going just to kind of make a bit of extra pocket money. What was the most successful one you did? Can you remember?
I definitely think the bows in high school. And this is when, like, Tumblr was, like, a thing, and, like, different weird prints or, like, designs run Tumblr. So I used to, like, print them out on, which is probably, like, so illegal, but, like, printing out, like, artwork on iron-on paper and then just buy, like, basic t-shirts from, like, a Walmart and then iron them on. And then, like, I made little business cards and I would, like, attach them. And my friends thought it was the coolest thing ever. So me, like, leaving with, like, $50 at the end of the week was, like, I thought I was, like, a retail tycoon at that point. So it was so I think that was the most lucrative at the time.
I love that. Judy would have bought anything with bows on.
I 100% would have.
Bows.
And artwork on it as well. Yeah. I love that.
It's like me and my brother used to have, like, a Napster. We might have had a Napster empire where we used to print all the labels on music. Because we were, like, one of the first families to have, like, good broadband, I think. And, yeah, we may or may have not done that.
And I love that you started in your dorm room, and that I read that you were a pre-med student, so you were studying to become a doctor.
Yeah.
And then you went to becoming a beauty entrepreneur. How did you navigate, you know, kind of going into a totally new industry and, you know, and becoming an entrepreneur as well in terms of, like, creating your own business? Did you have any advisors to help you, or was it just that you kind of learned as you went along?
My dad is a serial entrepreneur. So the minute I told him I wanted to start a business, he was extremely happy. He's also a doctor. So when I did the pre-med path, he was also, like, super happy. But I think that he was just helpful in whatever I wanted to do. There was no pressure to lean either way. So when I just told him that I was interested in skincare and then I thought that I could, like, develop a product, and I showed him I had an audience, he helped me source different raw materials, containers, anything you would need to just start the company. And we both, I remember it was the winter break, December 2016, we both sat down and put together my first website, which was, like, a basic WordPress website, and just put a few products on there. And so that was, like, something I always think about when I think of Mary Louise, is, like, that time we shared. And it was just, like, something that, like, always pops in my mind, like, I was just sitting at the kitchen counter at, like, 2 a.m. doing my first website. But he's definitely, I guess I would consider him, like, an unofficial co-founder and advisor for the company and getting it started. As far as switching over from pre-med to entrepreneurship, I kind of felt natural. Like, I liked the pre-med route. The chemistry classes were okay, but I could tell pretty early on that I wasn't as passionate about medicine as I would see my dad being as passionate. So it just wasn't there. But, I mean, I think it is the best decision I've made, switching over and taking that leap of faith from pre-med to entrepreneurship.
It's so good, and it's so good that you realized then as well, and, you know, you trusted your instinct, and it sounds like you had amazing support system with your dad and your family as well to not only support but encourage you to explore that. I think not many people have, I think, that support network as well, especially when, you know, if you're going down kind of a like being a pre-med student, you've got quite a stable career path lined out for you. And then obviously going into entrepreneurship is far more risky and unknown. And I think for some families and parents, that can be far scary for you know, to see their kids, like, doing that. But I think it's amazing that your family really supported you and encouraged you. It's great.
Yeah, I feel really lucky to have that support system early on, because I do know a lot of entrepreneurs don't necessarily have the support of their parents or family. So I definitely don't take that for granted. And it's definitely shaped me into the type of entrepreneur I am today, having that family support early on.
Your dad sounds like a legend.
Oh yeah, he's the OG.
Yeah, totally. So you start Mary Louise Cosmetics and you have success really quickly. Like you talked about the Twitter thing, getting banned on Twitter for being basically too popular. And so obviously any fast growing business, there's so many challenges you have to overcome. Like what were some of the big ones that you kind of immediately came up against, and how did you kind of get over those obstacles?
I think that my story is different because we had kind of like that viral kind of effect early on. And so me not having a business background at all, we're getting sales and we're getting customers pretty quickly. That lasts about maybe 7 to 8 months after the thread, just from other people reposting it. It just seemed like this viral loop that continued. And so I never put a marketing plan in place. I wasn't an expert on how to leverage the emails that we were connecting for email marketing. So I'm just like sitting here like, this is great. Like, I hope this never ends. And it did end. And so it was a struggle to figure out, okay, sales are not coming in anymore. I have all these customers. How do I like leverage this and get sales going again? So in my mind, I didn't realize that I knew I had a good product, but I thought that maybe it was a fad or a trend or something that just went viral on Twitter. Now it's over. I wasn't aware that it is possible to keep getting those same sales every single day. It is possible to capture and acquire new customers, but obviously I had no idea how to put together a Facebook marketing or Instagram marketing campaign, or the importance of PR or email marketing and like different funnels for that. So it was something I had to learn on Google the entire time. So everything we've talked about, how to set up marketing campaigns, how to leverage customers, is something I just searched online and kind of experimented with, which took a while. So I would say that between 2017 and 2018, early 2018, sales were amazing. And then I basically took all of 2018 and early 2019 to like get it together and figure out where I needed help, where I could do things on my own. And then I also figured out during this time what I like to do as a founder, because some founders may be really good at finance and that's definitely not my expertise. My whole thing is like, let's spend some but not all of it. So I figured out that I'm more of a creative. I love anything having to do with social media, content creation, product development, anything visual that looks good, that you can, has like, I can smell it, touch it. Like, I like doing that stuff. So I definitely have had help now with the finances and customer service and everything like that. But I mean, I feel like as an entrepreneur, you face struggles like every single day. Like, there's always something new, especially when you're a bootstrapped company. Like, I had no idea. You couldn't tell me like a VC from like a DVD. Like, I had no idea, like, what is a VC? So I think every single day you're learning something new. But that's a good thing. I feel like if you're not learning new things every single day as a founder, then you're not going out into – you're not being uncomfortable. And sometimes it's good to be uncomfortable because that's how you grow.
Yeah, I really love that you recognized quite quickly. You had a lot of self-awareness about what kind of entrepreneur and founder you were, because I think it's really easy for us to fall into the trap of like, we have to be everything to everyone.
Yeah.
And just, you know, rock the finance, rock the marketing, rock the sales, you know. And actually the truth is, we all have inherent strengths and things that we enjoy more. And our job as founders is really to create a business where we can do more of what we're great at.
Right.
And, you know, and then find those right people like you did to sort of support you in the other areas. And but one of the things I'm interested in, did you at this point go and speak to, I guess, entrepreneurs who maybe been there, been doing it a little bit longer? Did you get any mentors? Where did you seek out the advice you needed to kind of build the next phase of your business?
Right. So starting out, I knew absolutely no one in the beauty industry. I knew of no other founders. I mean, the most to the extent of that is just me connecting randomly with other founders on Instagram, and we would follow each other on Instagram because we were both in the beauty space, but I knew absolutely no one. So it wasn't until 2018 that I got a DM from Corey Weiss. He's at Ipsy, the subscription box company, and he asked if he told me he discovered Mary Louise on, I forgot where, I think on Instagram, and asked if we wanted to be featured in one of the glam bags, or like one of the seasonal glam bags. And so this was our first big project. It was like something that blew my mind at the time and still does, that someone, this was the first time anyone in the beauty industry had reached out to me wanting to partner on a project. And the fact that it was Ipsy was just incredible. So we ended up, they sent a purchase order for, I believe, 4,500 Miracle Serums for like their seasonal glam bag, which at the time was, and it still is, like a pretty large amount of product to have at one time. And so, long story short, the Miracle Serums had to be packaged in either a carton or an individual bubble wrap. And I did not realize that until the very last minute. So I spent like 24 hours straight packaging all the serums in like tiny bubble wrap packages and stuffing them into boxes. I did have help from my manufacturer. He was able to have some of his staff help me. But I mean, it's just one of those crazy founder stories that at least, like, every founder has at least one of those stories.
100%.
Everyone's got a horrible packing story to tell.
Yeah,
we've having done large scale events, we have multiple,
and we also have it on camera on our Facebook as a constant reminder of like how far we've come.
Yeah, so that is, it was insane, but it worked out. And so we had to ship the boxes of serum from LA to, I believe, their warehouse. I forget where back east, but definitely 3,000 miles away. So everything worked out, and it kind of gave Mary Louise this feeling like we're here to stay, or we're like a new upcoming brand in the beauty industry for people who had just discovered Miracle Serum, which was great because that's our best seller and still is. So, I mean, even today I have people come up to me and say they found Miracle Serum through Ipsy, like their first glam bag. And so Corey was super instrumental in introducing me to the beauty world. Their offices are in LA, and then they have one in Santa Monica, which is like 20 minutes from me. So they'd have events at the office. Other influencers, other beauty founders would come there. And so it was like an amazing network opportunity. And I can say that maybe 80% of all the connections I have right now somehow started at Ipsy and then kind of funneled down from there.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And also, your Miracle Serum just looks unbelievable. You know, I was looking at kind of before and after pictures, and it just looks like magic. It really is incredible. I really would love to try and get my hands on some in the UK because it just looks amazing.
I would love to have a launch in the UK.
Hello, Damien here, co-founder of Fevolution. So at Fevolution, interviewing great founders is just one part of what we do. Our mission as a company is to create a world where plant-based and cell-based businesses grow faster in their work to create solutions for a better world. And as a founder, I've been through several investment rounds. I can tell you they can be a long, drawn-out process. So earlier this year at Fevolution, we sat down to create an ecosystem and powerful tool to help startups and investors find each other quickly and efficiently. This new platform is now in a live beta. We have hundreds of startups currently fundraising on the Fevolution platform and are being seen by professional investors looking to fund the next generation of plant-based and cell-based businesses. For investors, you can learn more by visiting www.fevolution.com/investors. And joining is simple, and we've already had founding members including Blue Horizon Corporation, Dismatrix, Veg Capital, Kerry United, New Crop Capital, Capital Fee, and more. And if you're a startup, you can join right now, and it's free. Simply head to fevolution.com and upload your investment round. And we look forward to seeing you all there to create solutions for a better world together.
So cruelty-free and vegan cosmetics are having a really big moment, especially in the UK. You know, a lot of the kind of transparency about what's in the products, and I think people are asking, especially bigger companies, you know, to kind of be more transparent with what their ingredients are. And there's so many incredible brands popping up. What marketing channels and strategies have helped you in getting more brand awareness and gaining new customers, especially now? Because I know to begin with, you were, like you're saying, you had this amazing viral thread that happened, and then you had to kind of really spend time to kind of learning how to acquire those new customers. Are there any tips that you could give listeners on what they should be looking out for?
I think that if you are an entrepreneur that is running a direct-to-consumer brand and maybe you don't have a large budget to roll out this huge marketing campaign, I think it's important to focus on your email lists. Email lists convert great, and depending on the size of the list of people you have on your list, it can be free. And then it goes up over a certain number. But I feel like really taking the time to leverage all of those contacts and set and schedule ahead of time with sales and triggers. And if someone does this, you send this email. If someone does this, you send this email. So I think that's a great way to keep your customers engaged. By sending them not only just promotional information, because then they'll unsubscribe from your list because no one likes to be like someone who's pushy. Like, think about any blog posts you have, like repurpose content from your Instagram and your Twitter and your website's blog and put that into your email list to keep customers engaged. And if you have customers who are enjoying your products, show them that you love them by putting them in like a special email list, like your VIP customers. So I feel like email marketing is a great way to start, especially if you don't have a large marketing budget. Luckily for Mary Louise, the majority of our sales do still come from referrals or word of mouth referrals, and it's completely organic. And then the press that we get is also organic as well, which is great. So now I'm really, especially being in the accelerator, the incubator that we're in right now, I'm really trying to focus on what is our customer acquisition cost, because I have no idea what it is, because all the customers are coming from either direct search on Google to come directly to our website or through their friends. But yeah, I think that using Instagram, Twitter, and email marketing are great ways to start, because I mean, everyone has the same access to the same amount of people. Like, we all have access to however many hundreds of million people are on Instagram that you can possibly target. So it just depends on your techniques, and you'll learn over time, but definitely leverage Instagram if you're a direct-to-consumer brand.
One of the things we want to talk about is community building. Like, how do you go about like building that community? You mentioned a VIP mailing list. What kind of things are you doing as a brand to kind of keep connected to the customers and to get that feedback from them so you can develop products sort of in line with their needs?
Yeah, so I think that since the beginning, all of the Mary Louise family members, as I like to call them, are a community. I've always known that Akilah like owns Mary Louise because of my Twitter. So I was initially talking about Mary Louise and promoting Mary Louise and all the tips from my personal Twitter. So I feel that our customers or potential customers at the time could have put a face to a name and they were familiar. And I feel like a lot of brands and a lot of beauty brands, you don't know who owns it. You don't know who runs it unless it's like a celebrity or an influencer brand. So I think that was really important with building trust early on. And luckily the Twitter followers kind of migrated over to Instagram over time. So I feel like community building, the key is transparency and being honest. And I have a lot of customers who know they can just message me about whatever. And it's kind of like a cool relationship we have. So I feel like if you are able to kind of be, I guess, like the default face of your brand early on, I think that's great. And it lets customers know that there's not like a bot running their favorite skincare product.
Yeah. Have you had any moments where you've been out and you're, like, people have been like,
oh my God, it's the person who wants me to use cosmetics.
Yes, I was at, I don't know where I was. I forgot what club in LA it was, but it was like 1 o'clock in the morning and it was like the longest line to like the women's bathroom. And I was just like on my phone and then like these girls are leaving the bathroom and they're like, you're the girl that makes that serum, right? And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, that's me, girl. That's me. So it was just like a cool bonding moment. So it's like, it's amazing.
Did they queue jump you though? Did they like move everyone else out of the way and like move you to the front?
No, I still had to wait to pee. Yeah, it's okay.
I love that.
That's cool. Great. What I love about your company and about your products is that you really aim to kind of create high quality products, but at an affordable and accessible price point. And also just making it accessible for, I think, people who would not normally come across that as well. Like, you know, because I read that you're, you know, a lot of your followers and customers are, you know, college students or they're, you know, slightly younger, and it's, you know, making that sort of product available for a younger audience. Do you find it tricky with like the margins? Because like, you know, we speak to so many different founders about, you know, the kind of ingredients and about the whole process of creating the product. And, you know, there's so many costs everywhere. And so you have to kind of factor in so many different variables. And obviously when you're creating something that is natural and, you know, cruelty free, and it's, you know, it's something that's so beautiful, but how do you look after your margins, especially with retail as well? Because I think that's when people really get burnt, when they go into retail or working with like, we said, like, you know, kind of other brands. Yeah, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so as a brand who deals with a lot of raw materials or raw ingredients and sourcing those ingredients, I think that honestly relationship building with those vendors is super important. I've obviously like experimented with countless different vendors and tested different ingredients countless times over the last 3 years. But I think that it's important to build relationships with those people, and a lot of times they'll work with you if you're a smaller business with getting like an amazing quality product, or like visit their farm. Like if you want honey for your product, go to the apiary or go to where they're packaging the honey so you can get a feel for what's going into your products. And then it depends on how many extremely high quality products you want or ingredients you want in one product. So maybe if you're making a honey body polish, honey is obviously going to be the most expensive raw material that you're going to have. And then maybe you can use ingredients that are just as high quality but don't cost as much as honey. So I think it depends on the cost of the individual raw material itself, and then the formula you decide to put together, and then obviously packaging costs. Some bottles are more expensive than other bottles, some quality labels are more expensive than other labels, and you have to think of the cap, you have to think of the bottle, the label, all the ingredients, how many ingredients does it have, secondary packaging. So all those things should be considered when you are calculating your price that you want for that SKU. But I think that maintaining those relationships with those vendors and showing your face or giving a face to a name are super important when it comes to cutting down on cost and still having an amazing product with high quality ingredients.
So one of the big pain points for anyone growing a business is team, you know, and you spoke about like you had this crazy growth at the start. And then you're like, okay, we now need to get strategic and get the right people in place. And obviously, it's not like you've gone out and raised loads of venture capital money. You've just kind of had to do this funding yourself, you know, through profits. How did you identify the right kind of either staff or agencies to work with? And what kind of qualities are you looking for in people that join your team?
So I think this is something, I would consider this a challenge that I'm facing now as far as team building, especially now that we are moving into the venture capital world. It's like, okay, when you raise money, you have to obviously start spending the money. And I want to have in mind where I want to put that money as far as hiring. So over the years, I've definitely experimented with different like customer service agencies and fulfillment centers and social media marketing managers. And you kind of can get you try to get a feel of where it's like dating again. It's like, I think this is what I need, but I actually don't like you at all, so we're gonna stop. But I feel like places like Upwork and Fiverr are great to find people who can show you their work temporarily as a contractor before bringing them on full time. So I'm grateful for tools like that. But now that Mary Louise is growing, I'm definitely figuring out like, oh yeah, I need someone like for this because I'm not good at this, or I need someone for this because, or I need someone in-house for this because an agency is just not cutting it. You kind of will get an idea as a founder of where you need help pretty early on, whether it be things that are just completely overwhelming or things that you just don't like at all. And I used to feel really guilty about not liking an aspect of my business or not doing an aspect of my business. And I've learned that it's okay to not do certain things. And I used to feel like, well, maybe I'm not a real entrepreneur because I don't like entering values like in Excel spreadsheet, or maybe I'm like, not, this isn't for me. But I've learned like, it's okay to not like it. Just do what you like and then have someone who's better than you fill in the gaps.
100% agree with that. I definitely agree. And I think if you try too hard to try and like all areas of your business, you're going to end up not liking any parts because it's just going to become, they all just suck the fun and joy out of it. And you need to have that joy because it's obviously you're going to have some really crazy lows and lots of challenges. So you need to have the love and the joy every day for what you're doing. So yeah, it's definitely important to outsource or to find somebody who can do the things that you're either not good at or you don't love. I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with the spreadsheet thing as well.
Yeah.
I'm having to learn to love spreadsheets. They're my new best friend.
Yeah. So something that we're really passionate about is supporting female founders and founders of colour. What do you think the plant-based business community can do to help these founders get more recognition and also equal access to funding? Because that's definitely something that is a pretty big thing that we're trying to do with this new platform we're building, about making it far easier for female founders and founders of colour to be able to access investment. Because from what we see, I think we really know what's happening a lot in the UK and Europe, and there's a lot of early stage founders, and there seems to be a real gap between kind of early stage and like scale up. So there's, you know, we don't feel like there's as many kind of people getting to the scale up phase and, you know, accessing the capital they need to get to that phase. It'd be great to hear like what you think the business community can do more of to help support these founders.
I think that from a founder's perspective, the most important thing is if you love a product that you know is maybe a female-owned, Black-owned brand, like speak up about it. Like tell your best friend, share it, say what you like about it, post it on your Instagram story. Any type of exposure, no matter if you have 100 followers or 100 million followers, I feel like showing genuine like for the product is like the best thing you can do.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, definitely.
So one of the things most entrepreneurs at some point run into is the dreaded burnout. And do you have any routines or practices or anything you do to try and kind of help you stay fresh and kind of ready to do the best for your business?
I feel like being a founder in the beauty space, it's like you don't have to tell me twice to like get in the tub with a glass of wine, like a face mask. Like I'm all for like R&R all the time. But I do feel like burnout does happen, especially when you're in the early stages of your business and you're bootstrapping. Like prepare for a regular meltdown at some point. But now I do like to meditate. I like to journal. I like to take time throughout the day to, if I want to watch like trash TV, I'm going to take an hour and like just like zone out and watch TV. I love to take naps. It's my absolute favorite thing to do. So it's like right now it's like 2:33 are like my nap times here. So if I'm tired, especially working from home, it's so much easier now to take a nap, which I'm really excited about.
I love that. How long do you nap for?
Honestly, an hour or a little bit more.
That's good.
I don't know what a power nap is. Like, it's like, what do you mean a 10-minute nap? Like, what is that? Like, it takes me 10 minutes to, like, fall asleep.
Exactly the same.
That's really interesting, though, I think, because you're basically using your intuition and to say, like, hey, this is, like, how I work best. This isn't maybe, like, the conventional, like, way to go about things, you know, have a 3 o'clock nap. But you're like, hey, this works for me. And the beauty of, like, running your own company and setting the rules is, like, cool. Like, if that means I'm more productive and, you know, I maybe work slightly different hours, that's great. And I feel like that is the future of work as we go into past this COVID era, is that employers and, you know, businesses are going to be much more flexible, hopefully. And I think that will, I think, lead to better productivity from both CEOs and also employees. So, yeah, I think that's great. I really like you do that.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. And I think, like, the whole narrative that, like, founders get up at, like, 4:30 in the morning and, like, all they do is work is insane. I feel like it doesn't matter what time you get up. It only matters what you get done during the time that you're awake. So if you want to sleep until 2 p.m. and work until midnight, that's fine. And just do it all over again.
It's that Silicon Valley kind of bro culture. Like, yeah, get up at 5, work really hard, then
run 10 miles to your meeting. Like,
yeah. You know, we're in England. We're like, have a cup of tea, have another cup of tea.
Yes.
You know.
And I did have the guilt for not being that kind of person because I am a night owl. Like, I really am. Like, I perform much better at nighttime. But Damien is a much more of an early bird.
Early birds.
And then I felt, I was like, oh, I'm not a true entrepreneur because I'm not like this kind of 5 a.m. waking up and, yeah, doing all those things.
So we have this natural tension between us of the early birds versus the night owls. Yeah. Who will come out on top?
The night owls.
Yeah, probably Judy will win.
So last question. What are your hopes and dreams for Mary Louise Cosmetics in the future and yourself on a personal level?
I hope on a personal level that I will be able to find the perfect balance between entrepreneurship and also working on other aspects of my life. I feel like a lot of people get lost in their company and make their company their identity. And sometimes it's not always the best thing to do. So I feel like finding that perfect balance between work, family life, personal life is the ultimate goal, and just being completely well-rounded as a founder and as a person. And as far as the company, I would love to launch in Europe and the UK. I think Mary Louise would do so well there. I don't know. I think the Mary Louise, like when you said Mary Louise, like it sounded so amazing when you said it. I loved it. I was like, yep, UK launch. Yep, 100%. So I think
I love that.
We can find people with better accents than us to do it.
So I think that launching Mary Louise in different companies and developing more product lines and collections and just building our community is the ultimate goal. And having as many people use Mary Louise as possible is more than I can ask for.
I think that they're really lovely. I think the balance thing is just so true. And like, I think everyone experiences that. And if you can achieve that balance and like in other parts of your life, that's a really beautiful thing. And with coming to Europe, what I would say is that America's so complicated, it's so big, you know. California is like the size of the UK. It's absolutely huge. Like the logistics of selling in a country like the UK, you know, it'd be like selling in one state.
We have a lot of UK customers. Like that's like the second, it's US and then it's UK where our customers are coming from.
Oh, we'd love to help you over here. Yeah, we'll help you.
I would love that.
Let's talk more about that.
And on a side note, I absolutely love that you named your company after your grandma's. I think it's just so lovely. And it must be like a lovely thing to see your company grow and to have that kind of, see your family and your company as well. I think it's so lovely.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's really cool to just have them memorialized in that way.
Yeah.
Legacy, it's really cool.
Yeah.
So this is the quick fire round now.
Okay.
So we weren't quite finished. Judy told a little white lie. We had the quick fire round still go. So this is the bit where we just ask you very quickly to sort of one line answers
okay.
to the following questions. So the first one is, why do you get up in the morning?
I get up in the morning, honestly, to answer emails and make my turmeric chamomile tea. But other than that, to grow Mary Louise another day.
Lovely. What problem are you trying to solve with your business?
We're solving the problem of creating high quality skincare products at an affordable price range that are accessible to so many more people.
Fantastic.
Great. So this one is one I love asking. What resource has had the biggest impact on your business?
Google.
Great answer.
What are your top three books or podcasts you'd recommend to entrepreneurs?
The podcast I'm on right now, because you guys are amazing. How I Built This with Guy Raz, and a book, Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
Love it.
We love that one. We always come back to that.
It's really good.
So what do you know now that you wish you knew when you started your business?
That there's never the perfect time to start. If you keep pushing it off until tomorrow, nothing's going to happen. So there's never going to be the perfect time ever. So just start now.
Completely agree. What's the saying? If you wait for the perfect time, you've waited too long.
Yeah.
What's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome so far?
Balance with not making Mary Louise my identity, but just an extension of Aquila.
What do you do to keep yourself sane?
I watch Netflix at least 30 minutes every day.
What are you currently watching?
Oh, I'm watching Grand Army right now. It's like the newest show, but I watch like Haunting of Bly Manor, Haunting of Hill House, anything haunting, and then like Scandal. Like honestly, everything on Netflix. I don't know why I'm just like making it so hard. Like I'm watching everything on Netflix.
Yeah, we're basically the same, aren't we? We've exhausted nearly everything on there.
I live in fear that there's no movies being made at the moment because of COVID. I'm like, I'm going to watch all the movies and the programs and what am I going to do?
But we've got all the old school movies. Yeah. Damien's got this thing that we can't really watch old movies. I'm like, we have to watch movies from the 80s. They're the best movies.
We watched Fiddler on the Roof the other week, so...
Yeah.
Look, that's it. That's the end of the podcast. It's been an absolute honour to have you on the show, and just congratulations on both of us on your success. You've achieved so much already, and you're really just at the beginning. So thank you for coming on the show.
And thank you so much for like the incredible work you're doing and for making the world a better place and inspiring, I think, also like young entrepreneurs as well to take that risk and to kind of believe in their idea. I think it's fantastic. So thank you so much.
And lastly, where can people contact you? Where can they buy your products? Where do they need to go to do that?
You can buy all of our products at mymarylouise.com, and you can follow me on Instagram at Aquila Rolliford.
And don't follow on Twitter at the moment.
Oh yeah, because... don't follow on Twitter until like I figure it out.
Great. Look, fantastic to talk, and let's catch up again soon.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Hello, Damien here, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Feevolution. So if you head on over to feevolution.com, you can join our community of investors and startups and people building solutions to a brighter future. And if you enjoyed this show, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. Really helps us in getting the message out there and getting more people to discover all the positive stories that we're sharing. You can of course give us a social media share. Please tag us at Feevolution. We're on all the social media channels, and you can email me at damien@feevolution.com if you want to reach out directly. We love hearing from you listening to the podcast. I'm honestly amazed at all the messages we receive, and you know, it really gives us the encouragement to keep making this show for you, and all your feedback is always appreciated. And as always, a big thank you to Bridie Addison Child, who edits this podcast, and for all our guests and all of you, our listeners, for supporting the show. So thank you, and until the next time.